Quest on Planet Waves FM, here with you on the crossing of the year, the winter solstice, shortest day in the north, longest day in the south. May there be rain in Australia. So I want to tell you a story about an organization that I kind of worked with and worked for when I was a student at the State University of New York at Buffalo, from which I have my one and only university degree. And as you may know, I entered publishing from the world of student publishing. As soon as I got to a real school, John Dewey High School in Brooklyn, I got involved with the student social science journal called Gadfly and loved it. Did so much with this 3-4 time a year little magazine that came out, and learned how to write a basic article, and more than that, learned how to work with a staff and a faculty advisor, and more than that, got a job working at the printing and production studio that the magazine was laid out at off campus, and learned all of my foundational skills: typesetting, processing images, publication design, publication production management, all without any academic credit, but under the aegis of a high school. So it was an extracurricular activity. And when I got to SUNY Buffalo, after a semester or so taking classes and getting adjusted to a new life and living away from home for the first time from, you know, longer than summer camp, I soon got involved with a campus magazine called The Current. And The Current was published by a student services corporation on campus. Now, there's a lot of ways to organize the allocation of the student activity fee, which is generally a thing in a public university. I don't know quite how private schools do it. I'm not that interested in what goes on in private schools. I'm much more, my affinity is toward public higher education, which I think is one of the best uses of the government, right? The government does all kinds of things and all kinds of mean, nasty things and a few helpful things. But I think that one of the most appropriate uses of government resources and the structural power of government is to run university systems. And so I went to SUNY Buffalo. I've taken a keen interest in public higher education ever since. And when I was there, I got involved with The Current in my first year, maybe beginning of my second year. And The Current was published by Subboard 1, SUBBOARD, Subboard 1, like the most boring possible name for a company, right? But that's what it was, a campus services corporation, the distinction being that it was run by students. Nonprofit corporations don't have owners. They only have a charter and a board of directors, so they're a creature of the state. In the case of Subboard, the board of directors was named by the student governments that contributed money to the company. So the concept was there's numerous student governments at a campus like Buffalo, right? There was a law school student government and undergraduate student government, graduate, night school, and there was one other, law school, I think, right? Did I say that? So there are several student governments, and all the students need services. For example, all the students benefited from the campus having a volunteer ambulance corps that was owned by Subboard 1. The students benefited from a ticket office. That was owned by Subboard 1. The students benefited from a concert board. All the students, not just the graduate or undergraduate. So the way it worked was there was this corporation, and the corporation was on campus. Its office was right across the hall from the undergraduate student government, down the hall from the graduate student government. And the student governments all gave a portion of their mandatory student activity fee to Subboard. It was some small amount, like, I don't know, 20% or something like this, 20, maybe 25%. I don't know the numbers. Bill Hooley, who we'll have on the program soon enough, will know. We'll hear more details. And then the corporation, Subboard One, would fund services that all of the students benefited from. It's brilliant. You don't need a pharmacy for the undergraduate students and a pharmacy for the graduate students and a pharmacy for the law school students. You just need one pharmacy that's owned by students. And this was the Subboard One pharmacy. And among the projects of Subboard One was The Current. It was a magazine. There was also a book publishing arm and a production house where you could get layout made, like you can get your resume made. This is not clubs, right? Clubs are a different thing. Clubs were just under the student association, right? Clubs are just clubs. They don't really do very much. They like go skiing, right? Big deal. But to have a magazine takes structure, it takes continuity, it takes management, it takes a certain kind of resource that's not fully appropriate for a student government to be involved with. Plus, student governments are political, and they're subject to much more to political whim. And we all know that student organizations can have their funding cut when the new person gets elected student president and all this stuff. So Subboard One provided this consolidated, incorporated structure to provide numerous student services that were dependent upon university-wide. And I thought this was a brilliant idea, but mainly it was the structure that I understood that I operated under when I was an editor of The Current by my sophomore, junior year. I understood that there was a publisher, and the publisher was Subboard. Now, Subboard has a history. This concept of an incorporated student services corporation has a history. And I don't know the whole history, but I know an important piece of the history, particularly from New York, which had a vibrant student movement in the 1960s and in 1970s. And there was a young guy by the name of Ray Glass, who was, I guess, about my parents' age, maybe a little bit younger. And Ray was, let's put it this way, his gravestone says that he was the father of the New York State student movement. So he was president of SUNY Binghamton student government for a while. And then he was involved in the founding of the Student Association of the State University, which was itself an off-campus student-controlled corporation, which was funded by like a $2 fee tacked on to the tuition of students throughout the state university system if the campus elected to give money to SASU. And the point of SASU was to have an organization that was not directly under the thumb of the administration, that could act and speak and lobby on behalf of students. So the way this came about was that sometime around 1970 or so, and I'll try to attach a copy of this article to the program, which a few years ago I retrieved and put back on the internet. Ray wrote an article called "Are Student Governments Obsolete?" And the answer is yes. But the concept of a student government is a thing that basically exists as a creature of the campus administration, which is usually the student affairs office, and usually, from my considerable experience covering college campuses, they're just not going to be very friendly to students. They call it student affairs, but it's like, well, we're just going to keep a grip on you people and not let you do anything. And so what Ray said was this model is absolutely useless. He said it's like it's like the toy steering wheel. I don't know if they have these anymore, that's on the back of the adult's seat in the car. Like there's a fake steering wheel on the back of daddy's seat in the car back in the day when daddy drove. And and the little kid sitting in the jumper seat or not, and like pretending to steer. It's just a cutting image saying that's what a student government is. It has no power at all. Can't do anything. What Ray proposed was that student governments incorporate and basically take student money and essentially move it off campus, the better to serve the students. Because if the money is controlled by student affairs entirely, then there's only so much power students are going to have, including and particularly lobbying power, the ability to represent the students to the government of the state where the state university is located. Now, this whole concept from Ray Glass's idea of the incorporated student government up through Subord 1, which was founded in 1970, December of 1970, just past its 49th anniversary, is a notion that requires a very high degree of student participation in student activities. And these days, you just don't see that. There's a lot of reasons for that. The amount students have to work, many students working several jobs, how stressed everybody is otherwise, and it's just not in vogue. But the way David Hoffman, who is president of Subord, when I was a student there and was my first legal mentor, the first person to basically represent me as an attorney, although he was a third year law student, but this was in the context of the campus, so he could. He said, and now he's a professor, and he said, you know, college and university is not the experience for growth and university that it was when we went there. So the times have changed, and they have changed in the direction of students being less involved, generally not wanting to be involved, and the administration going to great lengths to foreclose student representation, which I have personally covered and witnessed within the state university system during a very agonizing period of my work between 1989 and around 1991, when the administration of the State University of New York, central administration, basically ended the reign of SASU, the statewide off-campus student association, because it was too powerful. It was too good at fighting tuition hikes. It was too good at convincing state legislators to think in the interests of students. Now, one of the nasty things you learn when you start to study university governance and the administration of universities, which includes from state schools straight up through Harvard, is that undergraduate students basically are taxpayers. The university is not about undergrads. Yeah, there's a lot of virtue signaling, and we're the smartest, and we've got the most minorities, and blah, blah, blah. But in reality, the university doesn't care that much about students who are paying $50,000, $60,000 a year to go. They just better stay in line and do their thing. And these days, at that price, most students are not going to want to take an interest in any form of student governance. And P.S., the opportunities to do so really aren't there. So the existence of Subord 1 was an outgrowth of this Ray Glass model of the incorporated student government, only this was kind of a meta-student government that represented the interests of all five at the time different student governments at SUNY Buffalo, and 10-member board of directors would meet and approve the budget and basically take care of business. And sometimes it went brilliantly, and sometimes it became kind of a center of controversy, which it happened to at the time that I was attending. And I witnessed that controversy, but I also witnessed other things. How I got more involved in Subword basically came down to this. As usual, I put out a satire. Anybody, if you've known of me for 30 seconds, you know that I have a lot of South Park in my DNA, and I'm going to put out a spoof every quite often. And so at the end of one school year, I think it was the 83-84 school year, I put out this thing mocking the college young Republicans called the University Malice. And I made fun of a couple of other people on campus who I was involved with. They didn't think it was very funny and had me fired. One of them, by the way, you can see on MSNBC. His name is Steve Leisman, L-I-E-S-M-A-N. Steve Leisman was the outgoing editor-in-chief who orchestrated my impeachment as the executive, second-in-command, executive editor of The Current. Only to do it, he had to break into my desk, and he had to violate my right to free speech in the form of putting out a satire. I didn't consume the resources of the magazine. I wasn't accused of that. I typed it on a typewriter, my own typewriter, only they kind of fraudulently impeached me. Of course, the whole art department voted with me because I'm always cavorting with artists and musicians. And people like Liz Webb and Debbie Sterner were on the board, the editorial board. In any event, well, now suddenly I've been basically illegally fired by the editorial board of The Current, which is just run wrangle based on political motives. They said that it was the University Malice, but the reality was that they didn't like my political alignment. So what do? I called the boss. I called the publishing company, Subword One, and got Dave Hoffman on the phone. And I said, Dave, I've been impeached by the editorial board, and I think it's illegal. So he calls me in, and we review the whole case, and like, well, that was illegal. We are going to fix this. And so the Subword One board of directors met and said, no, the magazine didn't follow its charter, didn't follow the impeachment proceedings, illegally impeach someone for exercising their free speech rights, by the way, which count at a state university. And we were very, let's say, civil libertarian minded at SUNY Buffalo, and Subboard One board of directors unanimously voted me back to the editorial board of The Current and said, no, that whole thing didn't happen. That impeachment was illegal. It was wrong, and it was conducted improperly, and none of the facts and the rules and the law, and so I was given my job back. Only the Current didn't like that very much. They obviously had fired me. They didn't want to be told what to do. And so ensued a lengthy battle over the summer where, in the end, The Current had its offices and computers budget taken away and was effectively kicked off campus because Subword had the power to do that. It owned The Current. It owned the typesetting equipment. It had effectively the leases on the offices, and it was responsible for deciding what was right. And this case went to the Current editorial board. My old friends, Kate and Bob, went to state Supreme Court and attempted to sue Subword to prevent me from being put back on the editorial board. And it goes, I'm given a subpoena, age 20. I've had it my first, I think, only subpoena. And the whole thing goes to state Supreme Court. This is a corporation. It's under the jurisdiction of state Supreme Court, the lowest court in New York, the trial court. Goes to state Supreme Court. Hoffman shows up. The lawyers of Subboard show up and say, this is a matter of our internal management of our company. These people have no basis in anything. And the judge handed it back to the campus president, said, this is a matter for the campus president to decide. Campus president was a man named Stephen B. Sample, who respected the autonomy of students. Miraculously, I will forever be grateful to Stephen B. Sample. His signature is on my degree hanging over my toilet. I see it every day, and I thank him. He he sent it back to Subward. I'm the president. I've got other things to worry about. I've got electrical engineering departments and Division I sports programs to worry about. This is Subward's thing. And Subward said, goodbye, The Current. They passed a motion. They said, Eric, change the name of the magazine, reconstitute a staff, and come out on Tuesday. It's a 48-page magazine. Well, guess what? We did. And so was founded Generation Magazine. And so with this, I became the head of an organization under Subboard One, certainly under unusual circumstances. Indeed, I became the founder of an organization under Subboard One. Generation ran for 30 years. It started in the summer of 84, and I think it finally went out of print in 2014. So it went one complete Saturn cycle. So now I'm the head of a Subboard One subsidiary organization, and therefore reported directly to my publishers, the executive director and the president and the treasurer were basically the people to whom I reported. And this gave me a new level of involvement in this independent, mostly independent, student services corporation. And so from this I learned, I mean, right, just what I've said up till this point, like all of the matters of corporate structure and knowing how all the organizations fit into the context of the university itself and the student association, an SA's relationship to the administration, and then Subboard's relationship to everything, including the administration and the state government, because it's a private, it's a nonprofit corporation, right? So it, as a corporation, fell under the jurisdiction of the state courts. We're no longer playing around in student-wide judiciary. We're going to big boy court in Buffalo. Well, this is all by age 20. I founded Generation at age 20. By age 20, I had lived through all of this. And the reason I had lived through all of this was because there was Subboard One Incorporated. We had the power of the corporate structure and the corporate veil to ensure, so much as we could arrange it, so much as we could keep it and negotiate it, which we did every time, the autonomous right of students to control their destiny and to do their right thing on the campus at that time, which all, in the case of Subboard, is not about clubs, right? Remember, Subboard was student services, period, ambulance, pharmacy, ticket office, concert board, publications division, which included the publishing division and the resume service and many other services, right? This is serious stuff, right? It's a university is a town. There were 30,000 people in our town, 27,000 students and 3,000 professors. And so we, as the principals of Subboard, provided services that everyone depended on. We did it well. And I served as editor-in-chief of Generation into my fifth year. I took a fifth year, and at the end of the first semester of my fifth year, I stepped down and let the executive editor, Andrew Galernow, now a writer for the Buffalo News, take over as editor, and I resumed life as a got a break and resumed life as kind of a student who could then study in the library. Of course, I didn't do much of that. I had other things to do. So here's what happened over the past year, basically. The university administration at SUNY Buffalo finally moved on Subboard and determined that it would be thrown off campus. I have covered SUNY administrations on and off since the mid-1980s. This is a fairly typical thing that SUNY administrations do, but now we are in this age of very limited student interest in their own affairs, very limited involvement of students in their own affairs. And so there's not going to be much energy to push back. Student Magazine was closed when at one point in 85, when there was a controversy involving Subboard, I was the journalist who covered it and discovered the power of the press to like actually galvanize public opinion and to take a complicated issue and make it simple. I discovered the power of the tape recorder and the transcript. I discovered the power of using photography as a vehicle. This is all the generation staff of completely student staff. We were fucking on top of it. And that's because we were interested. None of that exists now. There was probably very limited press coverage. And today's students, why do they care who controls their pharmacy? In the 80s, it meant something to me which I don't think I ever went there once, but that this important university function was actually a student-controlled function. It meant something to me that the concert board was a student-controlled function. I was proud of the fact that there was an ambulance corps founded by David Hoffman around 1981 that was completely owned and certified and controlled at because the students had done it and raised the money and made it happen. That mattered to me. It mattered to me that students had a role in their destiny. So when I talk about extracurricular activities and student involvement, that's what I mean. That whole spirit seems to have completely evaporated. The tuition fees, tuition levels don't matter much because almost everyone gets loans. So who friggin' cares if tuition goes up $100 or $500? It's just going to come out of somebody's loan. Schools are either degree mills or party factories. And so this area where there's this opportunity to actually take part in the governance of student life in a meaningful, not symbolic way, not being the president of a frat that's mostly a social organization, but rather something that has to actually provide daily services throughout the year to university community life. That used to matter a lot more, and I'll tell you, it mattered to me. And every day that I go through my life, as there's not been one day that I haven't thought of what I've learned or used what I have learned from Subboard. When it came time to start a corporation, I understood what I was doing and why. When it came time to start 501c3 corporation, which owns Planet Waves FM, I knew what I was doing and why. I understood my power. When it came time to get a grip on my accounting, which I took over 5 years ago, I understood what I had to do and why. When it came time to model the energy of an accounting office, what an accounting office should feel like, where things are efficient and conducted in an orderly fashion, I understood that feeling as well as the roles, the division of accountability, what generally accepted accounting principles are, how to work with a leadership cadre, how to recruit leaders, how to work with higher-ups. I learned all of this as the editor of Generation and being, therefore, the head of a Subboard One service. I wrote the charter of Generation, many other things. And so it was with great sadness that I learned just recently, just about 2 weeks ago, that the administration had thrown Subboard off campus and was attempting to take over all of these services itself. The Ambulance Corps long since gone. Generation Magazine ended in approximately 2014. There's an interview. If you Google Eric Francis interview with Generation, you'll see that's there. It's also linked to on my new press room page. Poke around the Planet Wave site. You'll see that I did an interview with Generation, I think, around 2010. They interviewed me about my life as a journalist and as an astrologer. So the services had withered. There's again less enthusiasm, less involvement, less respect for extracurricular activities. But when I was there, and many, many other people who passed through Subord and its subsidiary organizations gained much of their total educational experience through working with an actual corporation that they were involved in leadership of. And so as of last week, just about a week or so, 2 weeks past its 49th birthday, Subord was told it had to pack up and leave the campus. They fought this in court. That made the administration very angry. What are they fucking expecting? Of course Subord's going to get lawyers and go to court and fight for its right to provide the services it's provided for half a damn century on the Buffalo campus. And they lost that. Okay, that's what happens. And that's what happens sometimes in big boy court. And because they're a 501c3 corporation, they still exist. They had the right to take their office and move off campus and their fund balance in their bank account. Because once it's allocated to Subord, it's Subord's money. It has a purpose, has a charter. So now Subord's moved off campus and we don't know what's going to happen. We don't know what the representative student governments are going to do. The board of directors is still composed of representatives from the student governments, even though it's an off-campus organization. We don't know what the ultimate destiny is going to be. Are they going to vote to continue it? Are they going to vote to dissolve it? One thing is clear is that the student governments are prohibited from giving money to Subord, but Subord still has enough, I think, to start over and to basically get a grip and see the next step. The treasurer who was there, who was a graduate student, a GSA rep, became executive director of the company and had been executive director since sometime around like 87. So he was there, he became his entire career. And so hard to believe that this is how it shook down, but he's the person who actually, you know, had to supervise packing up the boxes and setting up housekeeping in an off-campus office. So to me, this represents a kind of an end of an era. Obviously, very unlikely to be noted in the national press. Who cares? It's just supposedly a student corporation on a campus somewhere in some obscure state university campus in Buffalo that you never see on TV playing NCAA sports because it's not that they couldn't get that going. But to me, this is an important historical turning point. And a kind of, symbol of the end of an era. Because the Ray Glass model of the independent student-controlled corporation that can act in the interests of students is basically over. SASU, the State University, the Student Association of the State University of New York, which for many years existed in Albany, is the off-campus kind of student lobbying entity, died very quietly at some point. I can't even figure out when it ended. I went to the collection at the library at SUNY Albany, couldn't piece it together, and so that too was the kind of an end of an era. Now, we need these organizations because students so routinely get screwed over by the administration. We need these kind of organizations because supposed student leaders typically sell out to the administration on such a dependable and routine basis, right? And it's easy to co-opt them. It's easy. When I got to SUNY New Paltz, after being in Buffalo and, serving as editor-in-chief of Generation and knowing all the workings of Subord and student affairs at the university, and got to New Paltz, where basically the administration just controlled everything. There was no there was no scrim between the administration and the students. It was ugly. It was ugly. It got personal. The administrators had absolutely no sense of responsibility. When the PCB explosions happened in December of 1991, a week from now, December 28th, 1991, anniversary is a week from now, the student governments and student newspaper refused to stand up to the administration. That left me. I had, using the Ray Glass model, had founded an off-campus student news service called the Student Leader News Service. I knew that to have editorial freedom, I had to be an off-campus entity. So I used that Ray Glass model and convinced student governments and student newspapers around the state and around the City University of New York to fund the Student Leader News Service. I could then, first of all, through our entire tenure, provide accurate coverage of what ended up being the dismantling of statewide student governance. And then when that time came, could take on the administration on the contamination of 1,300 students and really all students on the campus. So that off-campus model provided, it had, you know, additional life, and students at New Paltz benefited from it because I was able to use journalism, which I learned at Buffalo, basically, as a student, to leverage a $50 million cleanup of the campus. I mean, leave that to the student paper and the student government. Absolutely nothing would have happened. These students wouldn't even have a concept of what had happened in those buildings, and they probably would have left them in the same condition they were in the day of the explosions. They would have just said, fuck you, and left. And I took them to task for 3 years because I friggin' knew how to do it. And I learned from guys like Dave Hoffman and Bill Hooley and Jane F. McLevy at Buffalo, because I was so involved in this meta student government called Subboard. This is where I got my, I would reckon, as much of a business education as any business student would get, from direct, thrown right into the middle of it, participation and doing stuff every day, beautiful publications, where there was never a question about what we were allowed to say or not allowed to say. We just printed what we thought was the right thing. And that's, I think, as important as any other facet of education, if not far more so. I mean, I love my professors. The professors who taught me literature and American studies, my two areas of focus, were just amazing. I love them, and I've stayed in contact with them, some of them, till the end of their lives. But my work in this extracurricular area was the main focus of my life as a student. And I'm sad to hear this is gone. It was also great privilege to track down Dave Hoffman last week and track down Bill Hooley and talk to these men and thank them for all that they taught me, all the examples that they set, and the methods and the approaches that I learned. And mostly, I was encouraged to be a mature adult and lead my organization. That's really important. And I'm telling you, with David Hoffman, there's not a day that goes by in my life when I don't think things through the way he might have thought them through. And I've learned, I know how to stand up for myself legally. You know I know how to make my case. You know I know how to be a pest when I need to be and to get a result and to not take shit from people who think they're powerful. David Hoffman, thank you. I know you're listening. Yeah, man. All right. And Ray Glass, I wish I had met him. He was hit by a car when he was like 27 years old. So he never got to be governor, but he would have been. He was brilliant. And I will try to post our student governments obsolete. All right. So we are now in the spirit of a free and independent student press going to hear from the former sex worker Francesca for a 56-minute interview. The sound is not all that awesome, but it's okay. There's no background noise, just a cell phone. And I think you'll be at least intrigued and who knows, maybe even interested in what she has to say. And then I'm reaching out to the other sex workers on my short list, and we will continue this discussion in the coming weeks. When the discussion with Francesca is over, if you make it that far, I'll jump back in and officially end the program. And this next piece by Vision Quest is called Comeback, Part 8. All right. Here you go.